And that sound marks the start of the 59th missile for the masses. Welcome to the Chaplain Assistance Mortar Pod, where we fix the fight for freedom wherever there's trouble or broken parts. I am your host, Gary, and this is the podcast where I highlight a G.I. Joe toy, vehicle, playset, or trailer from the A Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to the present day, concentrating mostly on the 3 3/4 and 4-inch toy lines. Really focused more on the 3 3/4 side, but that does bleed over into the 4-inch side if you haven't listened before. On this missile, we will be talking about a vehicle with missiles. It has recently snowed in Connecticut for the first time in the 2023-2024 winter season. And with that snow, it makes me think of wonderful snow vehicles. And something that is quite recreational is the snowmobile. So yes, on this 59th missile for the masses, I will be talking about 1983's G.I. Joe Polar Battle Bear. And to start, a little bit of the background of the Polar Battle Bear. It was designed by Wayne Luther in 1983. And thanks to 3 3/4 Joe, now known as Creating G.I. Joe by Dan Klingensmith, Volume 2 has a little bit of the background of the Polar Bear and how the original concept comes from Bill Culbertson, an industrial designer. He was going after something resembling a bobsled from the 1960s. When Wayne Luther got the concept, he interpreted it to become a snowmobile from around the same time period. And also, if you look at the shape of the front of the Polar Battle Bear, that was to invoke the silhouette of the Hiss, also from 1983. The Polar Battle Bear was originally designed to be a Cobra vehicle. And if you look a little bit more into Volume 2, it will go over the concept sketches and the mock-ups, for which would become 1983's Polar Bear. The big thing I want to mention before moving on to the boxes and the marketing of the Polar Battle Bear is the spring action skis. On the sketch, you see two like springs or shocks, struts that the skis are suspended by and which hold up the front end of the Polar Battle Bear. But on the toy, those are molded in over a much wider, stronger, you know, form of plastic. So this is one of those few times that I can think of that G.I. Joe kind of cheated the design of the toy while, especially in the early years, trying to make it practical for play, you know, rugged play, which is commonly on boxes, and substituted that with a mold to disguise the fact that to make this durable, but also still appealing and also to invoke imagination. Now, taking a look at the front of the box of the Polar Battle Bear, G.I. Joe Real American Hero Ski-Mobile Polar Battle Bear with twin laser blasters, you can move, does not shoot. Figure sold separately, ages 5 and up, some assembly required, no tools necessary. And on that front of the box, we have a gorgeous Hector Garrido painting of the Polar Battle Bear launching or jumping or starting to. It's near the top of the ramp. The skis are in the air. The tracks are dug into the snow. And Snowjob pilots it with Gung Ho on the right rear fender slash bumper. And what I believe, or who I believe, is Flash opposite him on the left. Both guns are blazing, and you can see each missile mounted on the stanchions on the skis. It's a wonderful painting with that explosion back in the background. Really exciting. This is something that I did have the Polar Battle Bear when I was a kid, but mine was the mail away, so I did not get to see this box when I finally got it around 1985, 1986, when I redeemed the flag points. Speaking of flag points, that's the back of the box. I will once again like to thank 3D Joe's for having awesome images on his website, Carson Metaxas. Thank you very much. And also, he has that Art of G.I. Joe omnibus available. Got mine, and I haven't even opened it yet as of this recording, but going to get there. But anyway, taking a look at the back of the box, we have a prototype Polar Battle Bear. We could tell that because the colors are a little off from the toy. We have a black steering wheel or handlebars, and we have black missiles. But everything else looks pretty close. We have a white strut that moves the laser blasters, and get in on a little bit on the backside. So, Ski-Mobile Polar Battle Bear with twin laser blasters, you move side to side. Modern Army action weapon, the G.I. Joe Mobile Strike Force Ski-Mobile, based on the U.S. Army's top secret weapon systems. It's part of the new Modern Army G.I. Joe collection of vehicles, weapons, and figures. Collect them all. Use it to help G.I. Joe protect democracy from the evil enemy army of Cobra Command. Like to say that the top secret weapon systems, if Hasbro was able to get them, I would say the U.S. Army is not doing a good job keeping things classified top secret. Or maybe somebody from Hasbro is working for Cobra Command. But moving on to the captions around, of course, we got sturdy construction for rugged play. And it is showing that on the back, actual size when assembled, snap together assembly. We have movable skis with two removable Rampage rockets. We have realistic engine detail, simulated trees with movable wheels underneath, laser blasters you move side to side, skis turn, super realistic detail, a tow hook, very important, especially if you like trailers, and if you're listening to this podcast, you know I do. It carries three G.I. Joe soldiers, engine cover removes to show realistic engine detail. Wow, that's on there twice. And we'll definitely be talking about it more when we get into the blueprints. It's free rolling. And other than that, the little bit of the boilerplate contains track assembly, chassis, seat and engine, engine cover, roll bar, windshield, handlebars, cowling, guns, skis, two missiles, gun slide, label sheet, G.I. Joe folder, instructions, and blueprints. That's so if you bought this in the store and the tape was broken, you definitely could keep track of what was supposed to be inside that box. I almost wonder if that was there for whomever was packaging this to make sure that they had everything in the box. We get to detailed battle prints inside. These exciting blueprints explain fully how a real Ski-Mobile would operate. Add them to your G.I. Joe command file. And finally, two proof of purchase flag points. So for save that and clip that for G.I. Joe premiums. So two flag points would say that this is a lower price vehicle. Of course, by its diminutive size, you would expect that this wouldn't be 10 flag points. This would be, you know, two flag points. So we're talking, you know, roughly twice the price of the G.I. Joe action figures. A quick check on yojo.com to check MSRPs from 1983. The action figures were indeed $2.25 MSRP, and the Polar Battle Bear had an MSRP of $3.19. Now to cover a little bit of the construction of the Polar Battle Bear before we get into the blueprints, is there's basically three types of plastic used to build the snowmobile. And you got black plastic, which is used for the simulated treads, and it's also used for the cockpit / engine piece that goes in between the body, and also for the cowling. And then we have white for the body. It's a lot of times it's faded into a bright gray, and it's been a long time since I had one of these fresh, so it might have actually been a little bit off-white in the back in the day. But finally, we're left with the gray, like true gray pieces of the roll bar, the handlebars, the skis, the missiles, the side-to-side slide, and for the gray laser cannons. So it was pretty simple to put together. Looking at these pieces, the piece that I've noticed is broken or was misassembled by the parents or the child is there's a little strut on the laser cannons that's supposed to keep them parallel when you're sliding them side to side. And that piece is designed to flex, much like the vanes on the whale. Now, with constant use and plastic moving back and forth, what usually happens is it breaks. Now, the other flip side to that, several times I have come across this, and that piece was missing. So it might not have been apparent to the builder that that was supposed to stay in place. My number one snowmobile, I have a couple of these, it's broken. But for me, it doesn't affect the play with the lasers. They don't actually get too out of parallel when I use it. Now, the engine cover goes missing often. The handlebars go missing often. And the missiles, of course, those are easily lost as well. Now, the only other thing that I've occurred on one other Battle Bear is on the body, we have the rear fender slash place where you can have two additional Joes right on the snowmobile as it's being piloted. And I've come across one that got really brittle, and those fenders had broken. So I'm not sure how common that is, but that is also something to look out for as well. Now, I wouldn't say a good thing, but for the customizers out there, that would also be a place where if it was broken, I would not consider it to be a deal killer. You could probably trim those back, and it wouldn't look out of place if they were missing. But they're supposed to be there, and it's something that I've come across, so I feel that I should mention it. Now, this, you know, there's a lot of stickers, and if they're placed well, it looks really good. So really now, I think it's time to take a look at the blueprints. Now, on the box, it did call them laser cannons, but spoiler alert, on the blueprint, they are calling them the synchronized twin 55mm cannons. Pretty big cannons, if you ask me. I would have accepted 50 cal. With that, the good thing about the layout of this ski mobile is a lot of snowmobiles are front engined and they have a single narrow track going underneath the driver. Now this is a little bit larger than a traditional snowmobile or recreational snowmobile. So the track is much wider, and where on a personal snowmobile you ride it much like a motorcycle or personal watercraft, like a Ski-Doo. This one, obviously the driver sits down inside the cockpit. And because of that, you have this long fairing. And with the guns underneath that, to me, that says, hey, there's a lot of ammo storage. And it's really useful and it doesn't really stretch the imagination for how would this work in the real world. It looks real. Now, 55mm, that might be pushing it, but they're there. They're laser cannons or machine guns, whichever. You do you when you play with this. We get to number two. It's the torsion bar front suspension. Okay, I wouldn't call it a torsion bar. I would call it more of a strut suspension. But hey, that's cool. Torsion bars would be something straight and twist. These are more like an anti-roll bar because they are curved. You know, they're straight with legs that go down. But who am I to judge? We get to number three, the heat-seeking missiles. So there's one on each side mounted on top of the skis. I like the fact that they're heat-seeking. And, you know, that'd be great for hunting down his tanks. Interesting to note that they're not wire guided or laser guided or even radar missiles. So they're just heat seeking, fire and forget. You know, these would be missiles that when I played with them, they wouldn't be anti-personnel. We have a number four, the fiberglass upper shroud. That is essentially just the top portion of the body that the legs of Snowjob go inside. And we get to the body contoured lounge style seat. So if Quick Kick was driving this, he could be singing in his lounge seat. And then you get your six, your rear deck hand grips. That's the roll bar. The roll bar has two hand grips that extend down for whoever's riding alongside. And we get to number seven, the engine cover tail light housing. So it's just a simple cover that mounts on. And as for a tail light housing, it has a single sticker which goes across the center of the back of the panel. It's simple. Don't know why it needs a tail light for a snowmobile. It's not like you're going to be driving this on the road. And then we get to number eight, the roll bar. So I'm not sure why they separated it as such, but there it is. And then we get number nine, the independently suspended floating bogey system. So that's essentially describing the way the tracks are underneath the ski mobile. So it is much more similar to tank treads or a tank system than it is of a snowmobile. So that could be accounting for in the width of the track rather than a narrow, like personal. So that is something interesting. That also, by having a more complicated system like that, maybe this is a slower moving ski mobile rather than something fast, which would be what eventually would become in The Rise of Cobra, the rock slide. Now, number 10 is the tow hook. So again, with the wider track, this ski mobile can tow things like a HAL or a Whirlwind or even a Coastal Defender. So this is much more utilitarian than it is a fast attack vehicle, the way I'm reading these blueprints right now, which is definitely telling me that when I played with this, I played with this wrong. You get to number 11, the high-speed polycarbonate skis, which are pretty self-explanatory. You have the 12. I love it when they did this in the early years. They're pointing out the sticker. They're pointing out the polar battle bear insignia, which is the polar bear in white on a black circle with a red sword underneath. Nice looking logo. I'm glad they pointed it out. 13, we get the bulletproof acrylic windshield, or they call it a fairing in a couple places. That black piece of plastic where the handlebars are, and it has a nice G.I. Joe sticker applied across it if it was done correctly. Now, I wouldn't call it a windshield per se. It is more of a fairing, as it is described in other things, because I would think as a bulletproof windshield, it would cover the face of the driver, and this only goes as high as those handlebars. So a little misleading there, but at least the lower half of the driver won't get shot up. Then we get to number 14, the steering throttle controls, so the handlebars. And what's good about this is the handlebars have a couple gauges in the center. Today would be something more reminiscent of an F1 steering wheel, Formula One. You could also say this is something where the handles, the drop-down handles that the action figure grips, move. You know, theoretically, play with your imagination here for a moment, folks. So that gauging in the center of the handlebars stays put. But you don't need to turn the handlebars. You would be twisting your wrist to turn left or right, or, you know, twisting the throttle. So everything's there, but then that center portion is staying put. This is actually not too far-fetched because Ford experimented with a system like this in the late 50s, early 60s. So that brings to number 15, the analog instrument cluster, which is represented by a sticker in the middle of those handlebars, doing a nice job with like two little gauges and buttons and such. Good sticker, black and white, gets the job done right. And then we got stickers on either side of the handlebars. And those are number 16, the primary firing controls. So that'll be your 55 millimeter cannon guns or your missile launchers. So that's what you got there. And then number 17, it is the fire extinguishing system. So that's important to have on this. So when it's in attack, it gets hit, you can extinguish the fires. And that is a nice molded detail that would be to the right of the driver's hip as he's sitting down. It's pretty small, but that's all it needs to be. You know, there's not much there to put out and fire. You got fiberglass on the sides and then a bulletproof fairing windshield in the front. And then to the left of the driver's hip as he's sitting down is molded in is an emergency cutout switch. And again, it's this little detail that doesn't need to be there, but the details are there on a G.I. Joe toy, which sets it apart from other toys because there's no reason in that 1/8 inch of cutout area for them to add in a little detail. But then, you know, that's the care that the sculptors did. They put in to this toy. It's pretty cool. It isn't noticed at first glance. These last two details, you know, you don't see them. You know, it's hard to, you know, show them. And if this was a video podcast, I'd probably be taking a picture there. They're part of the same black plastic as the seat and the engine. The engine is number 19. It is a 160 horsepower rear-mounted V6 engine. And as engines go in the G.I. Joe world, this one looks pretty realistic. It looks pretty good. It definitely looks like a traditional automotive-based V6. You have an air cleaner on top. You got valve covers on either side. The intake manifold in the center. You have intake runners, six of them, going to each cylinder head. And it looks like you even have a little thermostat in the front of the engine, which is in the back, you know, towards the bumper. And you have a distributor in the back of the engine, which would be towards the driver's back. So it's a pretty realized little V6. I mean, it's just missing, you know, pulleys and drives and, you know, exhaust manifolds. But it's a lot more detail. Again, looks really good and it's simple, but it conveys the use of this ski mobile. Now, the only thing I would like to say is it doesn't mention gas or diesel. I would assume, based on, you know, the Army regulations, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, they were moving away from gasoline. So this could be a gas V6, which would be a different motor fundamentally than a diesel V6. Now, diesel engines, generally, they're slower revving, a lot more torque, and, you know, uses a common fuel. You know, As I talked about in the Ram, the Kawasaki's that the military uses are converted over to diesel. So why wouldn't the ski-mobile be converted over to diesel? It works, and, you know, for 160 horsepower, if they put the torque down, you know, you got that big track for this thing to motor along. It works out well. A lot of power, you know, the typical, you know, again, personal snowmobiles. You know, I know a lot of them are, you know, single cylinder. They're small motorcycle engines. For many years, they were just a 750 or 500cc two-stroke engine. This thing has a bigger motor than what would have been, you know, it's essentially a car, you know, truck motor inside this ski mobile. Number 20 is the rear battle deck, capacity 2. So that's represented by, again, those rear fenders with 2 foot pegs, one on each side for your 2 additional figures besides the driver. And then number 21 goes all the way back to the front of the Polar Battle Bear. We have a decal of black lines, you know, slitted to much like a military headlamp, the quartz halogen headlamp. So that's good. It's muted for night operations. And then finally, we have a little strut in between the torsion bar front suspension, the front stabilizer bar. And what that would do is just make sure that each ski, you know, supports the other ski, like so it doesn't roll over in high speed maneuvering. So here we are, 22 points for this little vehicle on the blueprints. And overall, it is chock full of detail. It is for the most part, it's a sturdy toy. And it then comes to go with, you know, how this was used. It got lots of use in the cartoon. It got even featured in issue number 11 of G.I. Joe. I remember when I hunted down issue number 11 at, I want to believe I got it at Max Cat's Comics in Middletown, Connecticut. I remember Cat was in the name. I want to say it was Max Cat's. I remember picking that up because it featured the Polar Battle Bear. And at the time, I didn't realize the Cobra Viper glider on the front and, you know, with Snowjob and Doc on it. It is an image very reminiscent of what was on the box. Now, it got plenty of use in G.I. Joe media. Obviously, as a snow vehicle, it didn't get a ton of use because it is kind of an environment-specific toy. Now, how would you play with it? Well, obviously, if there's snow outside, you get to use this. If there's no snow, it generally just hangs out in the motor pool until those wintry days. You know, with the Snow Cat, that's a half track. That can go out in anything. But this, with the skis, you really only have the snow to play with on this. Now, that's not to say if this had enough speed and the right track on it, this could probably at high speed skim across water for some time. So if it was going from an embankment to another snow embankment, you know, got enough speed, it probably could skip along the waves. Not uncommon for vehicles to do that. There's videos on YouTube of all sorts of people doing that with motorcycles, jeeps, and snowmobiles. It's just, you know, using the surface tension of the water and moving fast enough to not sink. So, but otherwise, it really is a snow vehicle. And unfortunately, that limits the playtime with this. As a kid, how did I play with it? I found ways to use it. I didn't have a lot of snow adventures, so it didn't get use in every adventure, but it did manage to get used because it was one of my toys. And of course, when you're having a long, drawn-out battle, you know, when the brawler gets knocked out and the Havoc gets knocked out and the Joes only have the Polar Battle Bear to launch an offensive or counter-offensive with, it comes out of the motor pool and it gets manned by a couple Joes just to, you know, fire and be defensive. And again, too, if you have the G.I. Joe headquarters from 1983, this actually has a spot on the left-hand side as you're looking at the headquarters, or right-hand side if you're behind the headquarters. You know, the characters right as they're firing out upon, like, an invading force. The elevated section of the G.I. Joe headquarters actually has indents for the Polar Battle Bear to be on. If you raise it up, it raises the Polar Battle Bear, so its guns are even with the little slot in front of that section of the motor pool. So this does have use, even if it isn't snowing. Now, if it is snowing, who mans the polar battle bear? And because this is a simpler vehicle, simple to operate, simpler to use, this can be used by just about any G.I. Joe operative. Primarily would be Snowjob from 1983, but its looks and its aesthetic really carry itself well beyond 1983. The angular aesthetic carries it into 87 with Battle Force 2000. In 2017, this would be re-released as a Battle Force 2000 vehicle as part of the G.I. Joe convention exclusives. So the toy has long legs, so to speak. Now, the aesthetic works well with, let's say, Frostbite from 1986, with Avalanche, with Sub-Zero from 1990. So really, this works well for a number of years. The only time I don't think its aesthetic matches is, let's say, with 1993's Snowstorm. And I don't have the Joe vehicle from 93 that is another winter vehicle, but it does pair well with the Avalanche. So as a snow vehicle, or as snow vehicles go, this really does last almost the entire length of the Real American Hero toy line, the Real American Hero aesthetic. So it has staying power. Now, for collecting-wise, the only thing that hurts it is the environment. So if you're not excited about Snow Joes, you know, you're not going to want to have this, or you might not need it in your collection. But it's a small vehicle, so if you don't have a lot of room but you're collecting the figures and you want little pieces to accentuate your figure display, this fits right in to most display areas. So the size of this thing helps its collectability. So now that I've covered all of that, how would I rate this? I love this thing. I have a couple in my collection, and I really don't see too many Joe fans not having this in their collection. It really is, to me, near perfect. It is a lot of value for when you find one of these, other than the couple broken pieces. How many 55 millimeter cannons does this rate out of 5? 0 being it's not worth anything, 5 being it's perfect. I have to give this a solid 4.5 55 millimeter cannons out of 5. The only detriment to this is it is a mostly environment-specific vehicle. And, you know, like I said, it looks good with just about any Joe in a wintry setting. You know, Snowjob, Iceberg, Alpine, Bazooka, Quick Kick. You know, really just every Joe looks good with the Polar Battle Bear. Well, if you've made it this far, thank you for listening. I have been your host, Gary, here on the 59th Missile for the Masses of the Chaplain's Assistance Motor Pod. And if you've enjoyed this, feel free to rate, review, wherever you listen to this podcast, because this is available on most major podcatchers, including Spotify, our host. And if you're listening on Spotify, there is probably a question or poll. And if you interact with that, I read every single one. Now, for more Chaplain's Assistance Motor Pod, you can follow me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and other social medias as well. But those are the big three, and those are the ones I use the most. You can also reach out to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com if you've got questions or other things. You know, I got good feedback from the Terradrome episode and was able to help somebody restoring one of theirs. Also, if you want to get a t-shirt to support the show, you send me an email to that. It's $12 in the United States. You can get a nice t-shirt out to you. Those are made by my good friends at robertbarnsinc.com. Also, the Chapsis Mortarpod is the strange, but not as strange, nerdy little brother of The Pint, a pop culture podcast. Now, with all of that out of the way, one final missile for the masses. Be decent to each other.